Richard gripped her jaw in his hand and wiped a thumb across her lips. He held his thumb up for her to see in the pandemonium of lightning. For the one in white, his true beloved, will betray him in her blood. His words ripped her heart. Colin covered her scream with his shirt as he swept out the door. The one thing she had sworn she would never do, she had done. She had betrayed him. It could have been no worse betrayal. It was a betrayal that had destroyed his heart. Crying hysterically, Colin raced after him out into the wild night. She had to do something to mend that heart. She couldn't let him endure the pain she had caused him. She loved him more than life itself, and she had done the worst thing possible to him. Outside, the wind howled across the mountain. She could see his black shape with his bare arms in the flashes of lightning as he headed for the road. As he reached the edge of the cliff at the end of the road, Colin threw herself on him, dragging him to a halt. The sky was a savage show of violent discharges. Thunder thumped in her bones. Lightning ripped across the sky, followed by deafening booms. Beyond the edge, when the most powerful of those bolts struck, the Temple of the Winds was there, but only during those fierce strikes. Between those strikes, there was nothing but empty space.
"Richard, what are you going to do?"
"I'm going to stop the plague."
"When will you be back?" "I'll wait here. When will you be back?"
He stared into her eyes a long moment as the storm raged around them. "There is nothing here for me." Colin clutched at him.
"Richard, you have to come back. Come back. I'll be here, waiting. I love you. Dear spirits, I need you. Richard, you have to come back to me."
"You have a husband. You have given him an oath and everything else."
"Richard, don't leave me alone,"
Colin wailed on the edge of hysteria.
"If you don't come back, I'll never forgive you."
Richard turned to the edge of the cliff.
"Richard, you have a wife. You have to come back."
Thunder shuddered the mountain. He looked back over his shoulder. "Nadine is dead. I am no longer bound by my oath to her. You have a husband and an oath. There is nothing here for me." Brutal cords of lightning slammed into the road beyond the edge of the cliff, bringing the Temple of the Winds into full view. Golden cloak billowing out behind, Richard leaped into the lightning.
"Richard, I'm here! I'm here for you! We can find a way! Please come back to me!"
When the frenetic flash cut off, the temple was gone. Another flash came, and the soaring towers were back for a second, weaker this time, and then gone again. Colin dropped to the ground, clutching Richard's black shirt to herself. She had destroyed him. From the side, Colin saw a streak of red. It was Kara racing for the edge of the cliff. She leaped just as another flash erupted, lighting the Temple of the Winds into the world of life. She landed on the road in the sky, and when the flash was gone, so was the Temple of the Winds, Richard, and Kara. Devastated, Colin stared silently at the rampaging storm, seeing from time to time the towering phantom temple in another world. It never looked solid enough again, or she would have jumped across. She should have. She couldn't understand why she hadn't. Why had she just stood there? Because Richard didn't want her. She had betrayed him. How could he do this to her? He said he would always love her. He said they would be together in the next world. He made her promises. He swore his eternal love. So had she, and she had betrayed him. From somewhere out in the storm, Colin heard the distant sound of laughter. The malevolent chuckle made her skin crawl. Dreffin strolled up beside her. He was alone.
"Where's Nadine?"
Colin asked. Dreffin cleared his throat. "When the lightning came and she saw it was me and not Richard, she screamed. She went crazy. She leaped over the edge of the mountain." Colin stared up at him.
Richard knew. He told her Nadine was dead. Richard was a wizard. She had seen that, too, in his eyes at the end, before he jumped across. She saw magic in his eyes.
"Where's Richard?"
Colin stared out at the empty air, at the black wall of night. "Gone."
On the road to the Temple of the Winds, in the eerie silence, Richard drew his sword. Its alien feel surprised him for an instant, until he recalled whose sword it was. He was no longer the seeker of truth. He had had all the truth he could stand.
It wasn't night here, nor day, yet there was light. It wasn't like sunlight, more like an overcast day with no hint of exactly where the sun was. But he knew that there was no sun here. This was not the world of life. This was a part of the underworld, an isolated, remote, obscure niche in the world of the dead. It was as if the wizards had found an out-of-the-way hole in which to hide the Temple of the Winds. It had been similarly hidden when in the world of life. The dark walls of the immense Temple of the Winds rose up before him, the twin towers soaring up into trailers of mist. The entire side of Mount Kimmermost was here, the whole part that was missing in the world of life. Richard knew where he was going. He knew more than he had ever known before. Knowledge was flooding into his mind. He was a war wizard. The Temple of the Winds had opened a floodgate into his mind. It was feeding him all he needed to know and more. He felt as if he were sentient for the first time. Recompense for the price demanded.
Lord Rohl!
A breathless Kara ran up beside him. Aegil in hand, she took up a defensive position. Her Aegil would be useless here. For that matter, it would be useless back in the world of life now. Richard turned to the winds and started out again. It wasn't far, not far at all. He knew the way in. Kara, go home. You don't belong here.
Lord Rohl, what happened?
Go home. She scowled at him as she pushed past to clear his way of any danger. She had no concept of the dangers here.
I am Mord Sith. I am here to protect the Lord Rohl.
I am no longer the Lord Rohl, Richard whispered. She gazed up at the huge black stone pillars beside the entrance ahead. Beside them, on walls of inky stone banded with copper-colored caps, frozen in raven black granite, stood the Skryn, guardians of the boundary between worlds, frozen only to Kara's eyes, not to his. Kara lifted a hand, bidding him to stay back as she peered down the passageway to the distant entry, checking for danger. There were bones at their feet.
Lord Rohl, what is this place?
You can't go in here, Kara.
Why not?
Richard turned and looked back toward the way he had come, at everything he was leaving behind, at nothing. Because this is the Hall of the Betrayed. Richard glanced up at the twin Skryn, guardians that had left the bones of two wizards here on this walkway, at their feet. Richard remembered well the message the Slif had passed on from Wizard Ricker. Ward left in. Richard now knew what that meant. He lifted his left arm, fist out, toward the Skryn perched on the stone wall at the right. Ward left told him which arm to use and which Skryn to ward. The wrong arm would have denied him entry into this place in the world of the dead. One of Ricker's traps for the enemy. His wristband heated. The leather pad protected his flesh from the power he focused in that band. A green glow enveloped his fist. The Skryn to the right, to which he directed his birthright of authority, glowed in sympathy with his fist, immobilized for now, to allow Richard to enter. Richard glanced up at the guardian of raven black granite to his left. Richard called out its name, a guttural sound to which it answered. Black stone cracked and crumbled as the Skryn turned to its master, awaiting instruction. Richard made the sound of its name again. He lifted his hand to Kara. This one does not belong here. Ward her back to the world of life. Do not harm her. After, return to your post. The Skryn sprang from the stone wall, enveloping Kara.
Lord Rohl! When will you be home?
Richard gazed into her blue eyes. I am home. Light flared, and silent thunder shook the soundless world as the Skryn vanished on its journey with Kara back to the world of life. Richard turned to the winds. The four winds and the seer watched from their place up on the wall. Richard scanned the solid gold runes running up each side of the wall beside the entrance to the hall, reading the messages and warnings placed there by wizards past. In a world without wind, Richard's cloak billowed out behind, a telltale in a place with eddies of power and currents of force, as he strode onward into the Hall of the Betrayed. Colin threw up an arm before her face as lightning suddenly cracked before her. The road into the Temple of the Winds lit for an instant. In the distance, Colin could see Richard's back as he strode resolutely into a passageway. Kara tumbled to the ground on the road at the edge of the cliff at Colin's feet. With the boom of thunder, the temple and Richard were gone. Kara rolled to her feet. With wild fury, she seized Colin by the shoulders.
"What have you done?"
Colin heard too much to speak. She stared at the ground.
"Mother Confessor, what have you done? I fixed it for you. What did you do to him?"
Colin's head came up.
"You what?" "I swore an oath. We are sisters of the Aegil. I swore an oath to you that if anything ever happened, if anything went wrong, I would see to it that it was you and not Nadine who was with Richard."
Colin's mouth fell open.
"Kara, what did you do? What you wanted? I spoke the words of the winds as they came to me, but when I took you and Nadine to the buildings, I switched you both. I took Nadine to Drefin and I took you to Lord Rawl. I wanted you to be with the man you truly loved. I took you to Richard. Didn't you trust in me? Didn't you have faith in me?"
Colin fell into Kara's arms.
"Oh, Kara, I'm sorry. I should have believed in you, dear spirits. I should have trusted you. Lord Rawl said he was going into the Hall of the Betrayed. I asked when he would be coming home. He said he was home. He isn't coming back. What have you done?" "The Hall of the Betrayed."
Colin crumpled to the ground.
"I have fulfilled the prophecy. I have helped Richard get into the Temple of the Winds. I have helped him stop the plague. In so doing, I have destroyed him. In so doing, I have destroyed myself."
"You have done more than that,"
Kara whispered.
"What do you mean?"
Kara lifted her Aegil in her fist.
"My Aegil? It has lost its power. The power of a Mord Sith works only in the presence of the bond to our Lord Rawl. It exists to protect the Lord Rawl. Without a Lord Rawl, there is no bond. I have lost my power."
"I am Lord Rawl now," Drefin said as he strode up behind Colin. Kara sneered at him.
"You are no Lord Rawl. You do not have a gift."
Drefin met her glare.
"I'm all the Lord Rawl you have now. Someone has to hold the Dharan Empire together."
Colin clutched Richard's black shirt to her stomach.
"I am the Mother Confessor.
I will hold the Alliance together."
"You, my dear, have lost your power too. You are no longer a confessor, much less the Mother Confessor."
He reached down and gripped Colin under her arm. His powerful fingers tightened painfully as he lifted her.
"You are my wife now, and you will do as I tell you to do. You have sworn an oath to obey me."
Kara reached out to force him to let go of Colin. Drefin backhanded her across the mouth, knocking her to the ground.
"And you, Kara, are a toothless snake now. If you wish to stick around, then you will have to obey me. If not, I have no use for you. For now, only we know that your Aegil doesn't work. Keep it that way. You will protect me as any Lord Rawl."
Kara gave him a venomous look as she wiped the blood from her mouth.
"You are not the Lord Rawl."
"No."
He lifted the Sword of Truth, Richard's sword, and let it drop back into its scabbard.
"Well, I am the Seeker now."
"You are not the Seeker either,"
Colin growled.
"Richard is the Seeker."
"Richard!" "There is no Richard anymore. I am now Lord Rawl and the Seeker."
Drefin pulled Colin against him, his darkened Rawl eyes burning into her.
"And you are my wife. At least you will be, once we consummate the marriage. But this is neither the time nor place. We have to get back. There is work to be done."
"Never. If you ever touch me, I'll cut your throat."
"You have sworn an oath before the spirits. You will do as you have sworn."
Drefin smiled.
"You're a whore. You'll enjoy it. I want you to enjoy it. To be pleased, I really do."
"How dare you call me that? I am no whore, especially yours."
His smile widened.
"Really? Then how did you betray Richard? Why would he walk away without even looking back? My guess would be that you enjoyed it when you thought it was me. I'd say Richard saw you for the whore you are. When it really is me, you will find pleasure in it then, too. I like that." Chapter 60 Verna gently shoved Warren.
Wake up. Someone is coming.
Warren knuckled his eyes.
I'm awake.
Verna glanced back at the other windows to make sure that the dead guards were still propped up to make it appear they were on watch. A light from a lamp on the table was just enough to show those outside the guards at the windows, but it would provide enough light to see her and Warren, too, so they stayed away from the windows.
How do you feel?
She asked.
Better. I think I'm all right now.
He had been unconscious earlier. The headaches caused by the gift were coming closer and closer together. Verna didn't know what to do for him. She didn't know how long it would be before his gift killed him. The only thing she could think to do was to stick to her plan. Warren had said that prophecy had told him that his only chance was to be with her. Out the window, in the darkness, she could see two shadowed figures approaching up the road. In the distance, on the hills, campfires by the thousands made the countryside look like a lake's reflection of the starry sky. Verna shuddered to think of the hundreds of thousands of brutes in those tents. The sooner they left this place, the better. She was thankful they weren't going up into Jigang's stronghold again. They wouldn't be able to pull off that kind of magic twice. The spells Warren had used would not trick the guards again. Thankfully, once was enough. This time, her friends, Janet and Amelia, were coming out to meet her and Warren. If that was, in fact, Janet and Amelia she saw approaching.
It had to be.
This was the fourth night after the full moon. This was where they were to meet. Janet had said that Amelia would be back from the tents by now. Verna feared to think of what kind of shape Amelia would be in. She would probably need to be healed. Verna hoped that it wouldn't take long. It was close to dawn. She and Warren had taken turns at short naps. They had a lot of traveling to do to get back to General Ryvish and his army, and they needed to be rested for the journey. Verna wanted to be as far away from this place as she could get in case an alert rose from the stronghold. Verna hoped that Janet had already told Amelia about the bond to Richard, so that she wouldn't have to waste time with that, too. As soon as Amelia was sworn to Richard, the bond would protect her, too, from the Dreamwalker. Then they could escape. Verna dearly wanted to rescue the rest of the sisters, but she knew that presumption was a road to ruin. On her 20-year journey away from the cloistered life of the Palace of the Prophets, Verna had learned that out in the world, a sister had to do her work with care if there was to be any hope of success. Rescuing the rest of the sisters would be worse than tricky, and it would do them no good if Verna got herself caught while trying to rescue them all at once. Best be aware of your limitations and take it one step at a time. She would get the rest of the sisters safely away from the Dreamwalker in due time. Right now, it was most important to get her two friends out, get information from them that would help her to rescue the rest, and get Warren some help. Without Warren, their cause would be jeopardized. Warren was a prophet, just beginning to come into his talent. If that talent didn't kill him before they could get him the help he needed. One step at a time, she reminded herself. Use care, use your head, and you have the best chance of success. A knock came at the door. Verna cracked it open and peeked out as Warren called out like a guard for them to announce themselves.
Two of His Excellency's slaves, Sister Janet and Sister Amelia.
Verna pulled open the door, reached out, snatching the cloak of one, yanked her in, and then the other. Verna flattened them both against the wall so they couldn't be seen from the windows.
Thank the Creator, Verna said with a sigh. I thought you two would never get here.
Both women stood with wide eyes, trembling like frightened rabbits. Sister Amelia's face was bruised, cut, and swollen. Warren moved close to Verna. She took his hand as she looked from one white face to the other. Her heart ached for Amelia's obvious pain, but there was something more in her eyes. Terror.
What's wrong?
She whispered.
You lied to us,
Janet said in a pained whisper.
What are you talking about?
The bond to protect us from His Excellency. I told Amelia about it. She swore the oath to Richard as you told it to me.
Verna frowned and leaned closer.
What in creation are you saying? I told you it will keep Jigang from entering your mind.
Janet slowly shook her head.
No, Verna, it won't. Not from my mind, not from Amelia's, not from Warren's, not from yours.
Verna laid a comforting hand on Janet's arm, trying to calm the frightened woman.
Yes, it will, Janet. You must only believe, and you will be protected.
Janet slowly shook her head again.
Before I swore the oath to Richard, Chekang was in my mind. He knew my thoughts. He knew what you told me. He knew it all.
Verna covered her mouth in horror. She hadn't considered that possibility.
But you swore the oath. That protects you now.
Again, Janet slowly shook her head.
It did, for the first day. But 4 days ago, on the night of the full moon, His Excellency returned to my mind. I didn't know it. I told Amelia about the oath. She swore, as had I. We thought we were safe. We thought that when you came back, we would escape with you.
You will,
Verna assured her. We will all escape right now.
None of us is going to escape, Verna. Chekang has you. He has Warren. He told us that he slipped into the cracks of your minds while you slept the first night after the full moon.
Tears filled Janet's eyes.
I'm sorry, Verna. You should never have come here to rescue me. It is to cost you both your freedom.
Verna smiled through her rising panic.
Janet, that just isn't possible. The bond protects us.
It would,
Janet said in a suddenly gruff, suddenly sinister voice.
Were Richard Rawl still alive? But Richard Rawl departed the world of the living 4 nights ago, on the night of the full moon.
Janet laughed a hearty belly laugh, even as tears ran down her face. Verna couldn't draw a breath.
Richard is dead?
Warren slapped his hands to the sides of his head as he let out a cry of anguish.
No! No!
Verna clutched at him as he sank toward the floor.
Warren, what is it?
His Excellency! His Excellency has tasks for me.
Tasks? Warren, what's wrong? What's happening?
His Excellency has a new prophet!
Warren cried out.
Please stop the pain! I will serve! I will serve as I am commanded!
Verna crouched over him.
Warren!
It felt as if a white, hot steel rod slammed through her skull. Verna cried out as she clamped her hands to her head. Nothing in her entire life of 156 years had prepared her for the fount of pain erupting in her mind. The room went black. She felt the floor smack her face. Her arms and legs twitched with the agony. Baleful laughter danced through the hot torture like flames through a ruin. Verna prayed to the Creator that she would black out. Her prayer went unanswered. Above her, she heard a voice, Janet's voice.
I'm so sorry, Verna. You should never have come here to try to rescue us. You will serve His Excellency now as his slaves.
The blonde one, Kara, followed him into the reception room. She stayed 3 paces behind, as he had ordered. She always wore her red leather now, as he had ordered. He liked the way the red leather made them look, like they were sheathed in blood. One of them was always there, with him, a blood-red reminder of the slick, sticky debauchery to come. Her blue eyes turned away when he glanced back over his shoulder. He knew that she stayed only to be near Colin. That was fine by him. That she stayed was all that mattered. She was harmless now. But it looked better if the Lord Rawl had an escort of guards like her. A proper accoutrement of his rank. And he was the Lord Rawl now, as the whispers from the ethers had promised him. Only he had the intellect to perceive the voices, the wisdom to hear them, the acumen to heed them. It had brought him triumph. Attention to detail had brought him his rewards. His extraordinary insight had brought him to the place of power he had always deserved. His gift was his genius, and it would serve him better than mere magic. He was a man above others, and for good reason. He was superior to others, a man of rare understanding, instinct, and rare ethics, unadulterated by the twisted excuses women put to their vulgar pleasures. His own virtue intoxicated him. Colin glanced up when she saw him striding into the room. Her face showed a blankness, an expression she wore almost constantly. She only thought it showed nothing. To him, It revealed a panoply of emotion. Immersed in the details of her bewitching face, he could discern the rich flux of emotions she tried to hide. He saw the way she looked at him. He had caught her glances at his body in the past. He knew she wanted him. She hungered for him. She wanted pleasure from him. That she tried to deny it only excited him all the more. That she covered her hunger for him with harsh words only proved it to him. That she pretended revulsion only showed him the extraordinary depths of her need. When she finally gave in to her lust, it would be all the more glorious for the wait, for the abstinence, for the yearning, for the delayed fulfillment. Then, at long last, he would give her what she wanted. Then he would hear her screams. The general with Colin bowed.
Good morning, Lord Rahl. What's this?
He asked. He didn't like it when the soldiers brought things to Colin without seeing to informing the Lord Rahl first.
It's just the morning report, Strephon, Colin said in that flat tone of hers.
And why wasn't I informed? Reports should come to the Lord Rahl first.
General Curson stole a glance at Colin. He bowed again.
As you wish, Lord Rahl. I just thought
I do the thinking, you do the soldiering.
The general cleared his throat.
Of course, Lord Rahl.
So, what do the morning reports have to say?
The general glanced to Colin again. Jeffin saw the slight nod, as if the general needed permission from the Lord Rawl's wife to report. Jeffin let it pass, as he always did. He enjoyed her games, the way she thought he missed things. It amused him.
Well, Lord Rahl, the plague is nearly over.
Describe nearly over, if you would, please. As a healer, vagueness hardly does me any good.
In the last week, the deaths from the plague have dropped to only 3 confirmed cases last night. Nearly everyone who was sick when Lord...
He caught himself.
When Richard left has recovered. Whatever Richard did...
My brother died, that's what he did. I am the healer. I am the one responsible for the plague ending.
Colin lost the calm look. Her expression twisted to tightly controlled rage. He wondered how her face would twist were it pain, were it terror. He would know in the end.
Richard went to the Temple of the Winds. He sacrificed himself to save everyone. Richard! Not you, Drefin! Richard!
Drefin dismissed her tirade with a casual flip of his hand.
Nonsense! What did Richard know of healing? I am the healer. It is Lord Rahl who has saved his people from the plague.
Drefin raised a finger to the general.
And you had better see to it that everyone knows it.
Colin gave her slight nod to the general again.
Yes, Lord Rahl, the general said. I will personally see to it that everyone knows that it was Lord Rahl himself who stopped the plague.
Colin's face showed the slightest hint of a smile at the general's ambiguous response. Drefin let it go. He had more important business than her disrespect for her husband.
And what else have you to report, General?
Well, Lord Rahl, it seems that some of our units are missing.
Missing? How can troops be missing? I want them found. We must have the army together to defend against the Imperial Order. I won't have the Dharan Empire fall to the Imperial Order because my officers failed to maintain discipline.
Yes, Lord Rahl. I have already sent scouts to find the troops who have wandered off from their stations.
It's the bond, Drefin, Colin said. The Dharans aren't bonded to you. The army is breaking up, wandering off aimlessly because they have lost the bond, lost their leader. They don't know what to do. They are without a Lord Rahl.
He struck her. The sharp sound reverberated through the room.
Stand up!
He waited until she regained her feet.
I'll not have insolence from my wife. Do you understand?
Colin pressed her fingers to her nose, trying to halt the flow of blood. The crimson tide flooded over her fingers and lips and down her chin. The sight of it nearly drove a gasp from him. The sight of the mother confessor with blood on her made his hands shake. He longed for the slicing,
for the sight of blood everywhere on her, for her screams, for her terror.
But he could wait until she begged for it, as had Nadine. He had enjoyed Nadine's perverted hunger. He had relished her surprise, her terror, her agony, before he cast her over the side of the mountain, still alive, so she could think about her vile nature all the way down. It had sated him, for now. He could wait until the Mother Confessor's true corruption finally surfaced once again, as it had the first night. Richard must have been horrified to discover how much she really wanted his brother, that the woman he had loved was as impure as any whore. Poor, innocent, stupid Richard. He never even looked back over his shoulder as he walked away.
Drefn could wait. She would need time to recover from the shock of causing Richard's death. Drefn could wait. It wouldn't take her long, as badly as she wanted him.
He swept Colin up in his arms. "Forgive me, my wife. I didn't mean to hurt you. Forgive me, please. I was only worried for our safety from the Order, distraught that these worthless soldiers won't follow orders and in so doing endanger us all."
Colin wrenched herself out of his arms. "I understand." She lied so poorly. From the corner of his eye he could see the coiled form in red leather. If she moved to strike, he would slice her down. If she didn't, he still had use for her.
Colin twitched a finger in caution to Kara. Kara reluctantly relaxed. Colin thought she was so clever, thought he didn't see the way she gave orders to people. For now it didn't matter.
"General Curson," Drefn said, "I want those derelict troops found. We must have discipline in the army or we are lost to the Order. When they are found, I want the officers executed."
"What? You want me to execute my own men because they have lost the bond?"
"I want you to execute them for treason. When the rest of the men learn that we won't tolerate such negligence to duty, they will think twice about joining with our enemy."
"Our enemy, Lord Roe?"
"Of course. If they don't do their duty as Daharans to serve and protect the Daharan Empire, to say nothing of their Lord Roll, then they are aiding the enemy. That makes them traitors. It endangers the life of my wife, of everyone."
He glided his fingers over the raised gold letters on the hilt of the Sword of Truth. His sword. He wielded it by right.
"Now, do you have anything else to report?"
The general and Colin surreptitiously shared a look.
"No, Lord Roe."
"Good. That will be all then, dismissed."
He turned to Colin and held out his arm.
"Come, my dear. We will have breakfast together."
Chapter 61 In a daze, Richard stepped down off the wizard's throne at the head of the Hall of the Winds. His footsteps echoed into the distance. It was his rightful place, the wizard's throne. He was the only war wizard, the only wizard with both additive and subtractive magic. The inside of the Temple of the Winds was beyond colossal. It was almost beyond comprehension. There was no sound in this soundless place, unless he put one there, or willed it into being. The arched ceiling enclosing the lofty heights overhead could have contained eagles, and they hardly would have been aware that they were captive inside a structure. Mountain hawks, were there any, could soar and dive under that aerial arch and feel at home. To the sides, massive columns supported walls that ascended into the remote curve of the ribbed ceiling. In those side walls, enormous windows let in more of the omnipresent, diffused light. At least he could see the side walls. The far distant end of the hole simply faded out of sight into a haze. Nearly everything was the color of a pale afternoon mist. The floors, the columns, the walls, the ceiling, they almost seemed made of the filmy light. Richard was a flea in a vast canyon. Even so, the place was not limitless as it was outside the walls. Before, he would have been stunned and awed by this place. Now he was neither. He was simply numb. Here, time had no meaning, other than that which he brought with him. Time had no place to anchor in eternity. He could have been here a century rather than a mere couple of weeks, and only he would note the difference, and then only if he so chose. Life had little meaning here, a concept as distant as the other end of eternity. He brought that, too, to this place. Yet the Temple of the Winds had perception, and sheltered him in its wizard-crafted stone embrace. To the sides, as he strode the hall, there were alcoves under each arch, beyond each pair of columns. In each alcove resided the things of magic stored here for safekeeping, sent here from the world of life for the safekeeping of the world of life. Richard understood them and could use them. He understood how dangerous these things were and why some had wanted them locked away for all time. The knowledge of the winds was his now. With that knowledge, he had halted the plague. He didn't have the book that was used to start the plague, but it wasn't necessary to have the book to render it impotent. The book was stolen from this place, and so was still yoked to the winds. It was a simple matter of switching the fluxes of power emanating from the winds, which enabled the magic of the book to function in the world of life. In fact, it was so simple that he was ashamed that he hadn't realized the way to do it before. Thousands of people had died because he had been so ignorant. Had he known then what he knew now, he could have merely cast a web spun with both sides of his power, and the book would have been useless to Jigang. All those people dead, and it had been so simple. At least he was able to use his healing powers to halt the sickness among most who were afflicted before he had interrupted the currents of magic. At least the plague was ended. It had only cost him everything. What price for all those lives? What price the spirits had set? What price indeed? It had cost Nadine her life. He felt profound sorrow for her. He would have eliminated Jigang and the threat from the old world, too, but he couldn't do so from this place. That was the world of life, and he could only affect those things taken from this place to the world of life, and the damage they caused. He had touched the core of power in this place, though. There would be no more entry through Betrayer's Hall. Jigang would not twice accomplish the same feat. Richard paused. He drew his sword, Drefin's sword. He held it out in his palms, staring at it, watching the light catch it. This wasn't his sword, the sword of truth. He let his will flow from the core of his soul, carrying his birthright of power with it. His gift came as easily as a sigh, where before he had struggled to bring forth the most insignificant shred of his power. Force flowed outward through his arms and into the object he held. His mind guided its elements, balancing each to the desired sequence and result, until the sword in his hands transmuted into the twin of the one he knew so well. He held the twin to the sword of truth, although without its attendant impressions of those past souls who had used his real sword. In every other way, though, it was the same. It held the same power, the same magic. Wizards had died in the attempt to make the sword of truth, until some were finally successful. Once they had succeeded, that knowledge was born to this place, and it was therefore Richard's for the taking, as was all the knowledge here. He seized the hilt and held the blade aloft. Richard let the power, the magic, the rage of the sword inundate him, storm through him just to feel something. Even wrath was something. He had no need of a sword, though. The wrath winked out, to be replaced again by the emptiness. He tossed the sword high into the air and held it there, where it rotated slowly on a bed of force. With a pulse of power, he shattered the sword he had made into a cloud of metallic dust, and with another thought, evacuated the dust out of existence. He stood empty again, empty and alone. A presence caused him to turn. It was another spirit. They came from time to time to see him, to speak with him, to urge him to return to his world before it was too late, before he lost the thread back to the world of life. This form, this spirit, rooted him to the floor in rigid shock. It looked like Colin. The soft, glowing apparition hovered before him, radiating with a glow the same color as everything else in this place, only with more intensity, more definition. It looked like Colin. For the first time in weeks, his heart pounded.
Colin, have you died? Are you a spirit now?
No,
the spirit said.
I am Colin's mother.
Richard's muscles went slack again. He turned away and continued on through the hall.
What do you want?
The spirit followed, as they sometimes did, interested in him, a curiosity, perhaps, in their world.
I have brought you something,
the spirit said. Richard turned.
What?
She held out a rose. The green of the stem and the red of the petals were stunning in this colorless world, a ripple of pleasure to his eyes. The fragrance filled his lungs with its pleasant aroma. He had almost forgotten the pleasure of such a thing.
What am I to do with this?
The spirit held it out, urging him to take it. He had no fear of the spirits who came to see him. Even those who hated him could not harm him. He knew how to protect himself. Richard took the rose.
Thank you.
He slid the stem behind his belt. He turned and continued on. The spirit of Colin's mother followed. He didn't like looking into her face. Though she was a spirit, and her features were indistinct in that glow they had, she still looked too much like Colin.
This is the end of side two. You should now change the balance control to the full right position and listen to side one again. This time, hearing part B. Simply reverse this cassette, adjust the balance control to full right, and continue. If using the book cassette adapter, place the switch in the B position.